Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Andy Jacobs.
And welcome once again to the H&J Daily, some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. We were very lucky to have a sporting great in with us. Stephen Hendry.
Yeah, he was on good form.
Seven-time snooker world champion. And his book's excellent. Highly recommended. And hope that comes across in our chat with him.
You had a great anecdote from the weekend. I loved it, actually.
Yeah, I did promise you that yesterday, and you'll hear that.
Yeah. We had a bit of a chat about food served at a banquet.
Yeah, and he got involved in that.
And a restaurant.
Clips of the Month. Clips of the Month went down a storm. So we'll bring you those. Well, I say that, I'm talking myself up, really. I mean, people barely listened. So we'll play that for you. Anyway, you get the idea. This is it. Good afternoon, Andy. Shall I get this story out of the way? It's not that. It's not as dramatic as it sounds, but it's a good tease, isn't it? I'd slept in Jim White's bed.
Oh, yeah, go on. Yeah.
So anyway, there I was. Mind my own business, and this Scotsman side was up to me. No, it's not. That's not the way it happened. I flew in from Boston to Madrid on my own, because I'd been seeing my son over there, and of course I didn't think for one minute, I was due to come back Sunday to London, I didn't think for one minute Tottenham would make the Champions League final. So when they did, I just...
little
faith. Yeah, well, yeah, right. Yeah, of course, I should have expected it.
Yeah.
So...
Blockbook the next 10,
I mean, say. I wasn't as sure as Adrian Durham was, because he fancied us all the way, didn't he?
Yeah, did
he's
he
got
really...
sunstroke, is he all right? A bit more factor 50, for goodness sake. So anyway, my friends weren't getting into sort of lunchtime to Madrid, so I had a little bit of time to kill. So I said to our guys, were over there obviously working, and the team over there, the Moose and Saggers and everybody, and Jim had done the show the day before. And so I said to the producers, to Laurie, I'll pop in and see, have a bit of breakfast with you. He said, yeah, do that. And so I did. And Jim came down, we had a bit of breakfast, the three of us, and the Moose joined us. And then...
That was the end of the buffet.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. They did send out for reinforcements when they saw him come in. They did play the Jaws theme. They took off the soft music. So anyway, we just sat having a chat. And I'd had an hour's kip on the plane. It wasn't the greatest of flights because, you know, I'd taken off 6 o'clock in the evening, 6 hour flight. You don't get much kip, do you? By the time you fall asleep,
it's
all
awkward.
So I was a bit knackered, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
So the suggestion, Jim was leaving his room. Someone else was taking his room over from the production team a little bit later on that day. So there was this window.
There was this window
of Jim leaving it. For me to get a couple of hours shut eye and a shower.
Had the bed been made?
Well, look, there were two beds pushed together, right? And I was very aware that the next person coming in may find themselves in a situation, and this was their room, effectively, from sort of 1-2 o'clock.
You didn't want
the cleaners wouldn't get in there. Yeah. So I wasn't going to sully the other. It was like the three
sully
beds.
Sully is a good word.
I wasn't going to sully the other bed.
Than
so what I did was...
Go on.
I only had a doze. Yeah, I wasn't going to get my head down for the night. So I pulled up and I laid on the bed that Jim had slept on. I don't know what's a report back. There was
no aftershave smell?
No. Mm. He's an incredibly clean man. That's all I can tell you. He's a very tidy man. You wouldn't have thought anybody had been in there apart from some ruffled. All the sheets were yellow, obviously.
Yeah, of course they were.
Yellow duvet. No, he insists on that in any
room. Before he checked
fresh
in.
Fresh daffs in the room, he insists on that.
That's
all
good.
I can say, I don't want to give away too much, but all I can say is that he had thrown away a pair of sandals. They were there in the bin.
Really?
He obviously decided he was...
Were they yellow?
They weren't yellow,
but that's
no.
why he threw them away.
Yeah, probably.
He wasn't happy with them.
But that's all I'm prepared to say, but he was a top man. God bless him. He let me take his... he gave me the key and said, go and have a couple of hours, Kip. So there we are. That was the day I slept in Jim White's bed.
It's a very
and
good
thankfully
story.
The cleaners did get in there. And so the next person, had, it was pristine.
Oh, right.
No, wasn't Christine.
I thought you were going to say
it wasn't
was.
Christine in okay. the next. Yeah, so anyway, well done.
That's good. Now, I've got a bit of news for you.
I won't be telling that on Piers Morgan,
well,
but there we are.
No,
it did slightly fizzle out, yeah. All right.
Oh, no, I thought it had legs.
All right, good.
A live gecko has been found in a punnet of strawberries at Sainsbury's and in Essex, in Basildon, in Essex.
Nice, yeah.
I was thinking, will they be serving those at Wimbledon this year? It's quite a nice touch.
How much are geckos? How much? What a punnet of geckos.
Why not?
Yeah, go. It'll cost you a
with
couple
only
of quid.
One gecko.
You know.
A restaurant is opening in London next
What do they
week.
Call it? I mean, the police, obviously, the RSPCA took it, and there's only one name they're going to call it, isn't it? Gordon, isn't it?
Yeah,
how many geckos?
Gordon.
Geckos should all get together and say, can't you come up with anything better? Pet geckos of the world, you know.
Yeah, I can't think of any. If you've got a gecko, it probably is called Gordon, isn't it?
I would imagine. Yeah.
Anyway, a restaurant opening in London.
You've got a gecko. Who's got a gecko?
I don't know, let us know. Restaurant
Who's got a gecko?
Restaurant opens
it's
in
a
London.
Great for a vent act, that, isn't it?
Yeah. It's very true.
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of ventriloquist acts.
You don't.
These days.
They've died out. What about? Yeah. I don't watch
Britain's Got Talent. Just full of magicians. There were about three or four magicians in the final.
So
you saw a lot of magicians right through the whole series.
There are some good modern ventriloquists, aren't they? Sorry, you're listening to Talks.
Oh, no, there was
there
one.
Are.
There was one in the semi-final. Yeah, I didn't like him, actually.
No, it wasn't. Was he old school? Was he drinking
no,
glasses
that
of water?
A bit like the Nina Conte thing, where you give
they'd
somebody
put them on your
famous,
mouth. Yeah.
And you can work it, and then you'd throw your voice.
He was very clever.
Yeah,
you do get some very good ones, but it's a bit of a dying art, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I'd say so. But
because
anyway.
They're quite scary. There must be a word for... fear of ventriloquist dummies. Is there one? Because they are quite scary, aren't they?
They are scary, yeah.
They're quite fearsome.
I had one
they're
when
quite...
I was a boy. Was
that, they always look like kind of
they always,
scary old men, don't they?
Yeah,
yeah,
they do. There's something really
weird,
peculiar about them.
Weird look. Have you ever met anybody who looked like a ventriloquist dummy?
Yeah, our producer, John Kennedy.
Yeah, that's a bit harsh.
Well, he fit on your lap. I think he looked quite good.
Well,
you two
do.
Could go out as a vent.
We could do. I could work you from behind, couldn't you?
You're pardon the expression.
We could do... Oh, for goodness sake. We could draw those two lines, the little kind of black pen down your face, just like a kind of moustache. That would be great. And
we can do that on the road. When we go on the road later in the year, more news of that to come.
More of that, John. We could go on Britain's Got Talent. That would be marvellous, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Paul Hawksby and Cadders.
Yeah, Cadders. Oh, it'd be great, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Anyway, a restaurant is opening in London next week. I'll finally get to this.
Nations League starts tonight.
I know.
Yeah, go on, carry on.
We'll be able to talk about football tomorrow. It'd be marvellous. Mm. A nation
awaits your next line.
A restaurant opens in London next week.
Yeah.
But it's unique. You're not allowed to use your hands, and servers will put food in your mouth. There's no cutlery. The servers put the food in your mouth. I mean,
wow.
Do they decide when you've had enough? Or is it like foie gras situation? Like shoveling it in.
You won't get the moose in there, will you?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
What a peculiar idea. Would you want to go to a restaurant where...
Where you're fed.
I mean, it's a
bit of... It feels a bit like ancient Rome, doesn't it? Ancient Greece.
It's an old idea, I think.
So... how would it work? They just sort of stand next to the table and pop it in.
Okay, so would you like some sprouts? I don't know. What are they going to give you? A bit of steak now?
You had enough veg? You fancy a little bit of meat?
See that.
What a job, though, to have to put food in people's mouths.
People like to eat their food in a certain way. My wife's got this thing where she likes to chop all the food up into small little bits. It's peculiar.
Is she really? What, is she five?
I know. But that's how she likes to eat. Other people like to eat, you know, they'll eat the potato with the meat, with the Yorkshire, dip it in the gravy. Yeah, everyone's got a different style of eating.
You've all got to have your own techniques.
I can't see this working at all. Anyway,
same again. I'd love chatting to you.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Good to see you, Stephen.
Yeah, nice to be here.
Yeah. You listen to the station. You're a big football fan, aren't you? Cool.
Yeah, very, very much so. As Talk Sport is probably my go-to station when I switch
Brilliant.
On the car or in the kitchen or whatever. So yeah.
Okay, clip that.
Yeah, there we are. That's your ad campaign. Hearts are your club of choice. You used to go with your dad, didn't you?
Yeah, I was born in Gorgie, Robertson Avenue, about half a mile from the ground. Used to go every home game, and I used to say, if you misbehave, you're coming back next week. But my hero was Bobby Prentice. Yourself, love him watching going down the left wing.
Now, we know that because one of the lovely devices in your autobiography, which is out in paperback, Me and the Table, are these box outs you do, these little five favourite things, and they range from your favourite food to your favourite snooker players to your favourite Hearts players, and you go through your little list of five in that. So there's a couple of recognisable names in there for more kind of recent years. John Robertson gets in there, doesn't he?
Yeah. John Robertson, he was a sort of the number nine for so many years, a big hero. I think the likes of Eamon Bannon in there, Craig Levein, the legends of Hearts. But I sort of moved away from, I think the last time I was at Tynecastle was when I won my first world title. I took the trophy on the pitch, which was a great honour. And it was funny because I didn't have a tie on. I had to put a tie on me to be in the director's box.
Yeah, really? When you started the idea in the book of doing your top five and thing, did it become something that you thought by the end of the book, I wish I hadn't thought of it, or did they come easy to you?
Once I started, I thought it was only going to be about a dozen. But then the publishers kind of said, can we have one in between every single chapter? So I had to sort of think of more and more. But it was quite easy, actually. I mean, it was good fun.
It's a fascinating read. It's an amazing story because, you know, you were this kind of incredible child star, really, playing pro at 16. And the way it all came about, I'm sure it's true of most people in a sport, whether they were given a football or a tennis racket, but you got a snooker table at seven, but you became obsessed with it, didn't you, with the game? You kind of already were. You were watching it anyway, weren't you?
I didn't actually watch snooker before. I was 2 weeks before my 13th birthday. My mum and I were walking along the high street in Dunfermline where my dad had a fruit shop, and she didn't have a clue what to get me for Christmas. And we've sort of seen this little table in the window of John Menzies' shop, other shops available, obviously. And she says, what do you think about that? And I says, yeah, that looks cool. And got it from a Christmas. And within 2 or 3 weeks, I was making 50 breaks, but didn't think anything of it. And then just fell in love with the game, played every minute I could.
So it just happened upon this incredible natural ability that you had. You've obviously watched other kids at 13, and after a few months, they're nowhere near as good as you. You just had it. You just had something in you.
Yeah, it was amazing. Obviously, playing your friends, playing your family, and they couldn't play, but you could. It gave you a sort of great buzz. My dad's dad died before I was born, but apparently he was a really good snooker player.
Right.
So whether the talent has sort of skipped a generation and come to me, because my dad was hopeless.
Yeah. Did you want, I mean, you were good at it, but you wanted to keep playing. You were loving it, were you? Simply because you were finding it so naturally easy.
Yeah, I fell in love with the game. It was something that I didn't, you know, I played football at school and badminton, but never stood out at anything, really. I wasn't especially talented at anything. But suddenly I found this thing that I was better than everyone, I was beating everyone. And even going to, moving up to the full-size table winning junior tournaments within sort of 5-6 months. I made my first century break on a full-size table within sort of 4 or 5 months. And it was, looking back, it's like weird, really, that all of a sudden this thing that you've never done before and all of a sudden you're so good at it.
Yeah.
It's not easy for a sportsman to dominate, but you had this period, didn't you, between 1990 and 99 where you really were dominant in your sport in a way maybe no one else has ever been.
Yeah, I think obviously Steve was in the 80s, did a similar thing. I won, obviously 5 world titles in a row, and it was a time where I almost took winning for granted, which was like an amazing, again, looking at, amazing feeling to have, because obviously when all of a sudden you lose that towards the end of your career, when you're not winning, you look back, God, it was so easy.
Yeah.
It was so easy to win, and now it was like hard, so easy to lose. It's a big turnaround.
I know that, we'll talk later on. You had some therapy along the way. You've looked at the kind of psychology of the game. So do you think there were times when players were beaten before they even got to the table because they were playing you? They were kind of mentally, they thought, I can't beat this guy.
Oh, without a doubt. And that's that in an individual sport, it's massive. And I say that to, if I talk to Judd Trump or these players, I say that's the biggest thing now. Can you sense that the players are scared? And you can get to it, you know that they're beat before you get on the table. And sometimes that can, that can give you sort of 2 or 3 rounds of a tournament before you get to the semi-final and play someone that's probably not as scared.
Yeah. But there isn't that kind of dominance maybe that you and Steve had, is there? Now, I mean, Ronnie to an extent, but a lot of the guys kind of feel like on their day they can beat each other.
Yeah, people always say to me, as a standard gone up nowadays, and I think generally there's more players playing that very high standard, so that it's very difficult for one player now to dominate. This season, you've had Neil Robertson, Judd Trump and Ronnie share the majority of the tournaments, but not one person, I think, will do that again, just because there's so many great players now.
Before a World Championship, you went off to a little snooker club in Essex and were just playing for some exhibitions and warm-ups, and there was this 14-year-old kid, wasn't there, who you took on?
Yeah, it was amazing, because you sort of hear through the grapevine of these, if there's a young talent somewhere, you'll say, oh, look out for this guy. And yeah, I went down to Essex, as you say, played this exhibition. It was this young kid who, I think he already had, like, growth, you know, he already had a beard. He was but he looked, on the table, he was just incredible. He knew the shots, you know, positionally. He played the shot. I knew what shot he was going to play. Obviously it was Ronnie. And it's just what a talent.
And you knew he was going to be a big star.
Yeah, very, very much so. Just by the way he played, going around sort of break building. That was sort of my way of telling if a player could actually really play the game, way that they controlled the cue ball, and he had that from the beginning.
Your route into playing pro, is just kind of working where you start playing for money, start playing better players, playing at different clubs. And there's a funny story in there. You end up going to some pretty rough old pubs in Glasgow where you're getting the eye from these guys and they're all cheering on their mates. You think you might not get out in one piece. Is that still going on? Does it work like that still? You still have to kind of pay your dues like that on the way up?
I don't know whether it goes on as much the way the professional game is. I think there's so many tournaments, there's Q schools and things like that. But that was a real way of making you sort of match fit. I mean, I, to be honest, I didn't win many of them games. It was quite intimidating. Mm. My manager lost a right few quid because it was him that's putting up the money.
You're not 14 and 15. You shouldn't be on the impacts, really.
I know. It was an experience.
Yeah.
It's a lot of these clubs are not even there anymore, which was a bit of a shame because you look at it, although it was quite intimidating, it was a great atmosphere.
When a sportsman dominates his sport, like a Schumacher or like yourself, like Sampras, people start to get angry at them because they think you're ruining the sport. Did you sense that when you were dominating the way that you did?
Oh, very, very much so. And obviously going back to Steve again, he was the same. We were both very unpopular in our time, and we only became popular when we started losing.
That's old,
obviously,
isn't it?
I know it's the British way, I suppose. You know, the public, they loved Alex Higgins, they loved Jimmy White, and Ronnie's a bit unique actually because he wins all the time and he's popular, so he's got everything, really.
Because he's flawed. He's so, you know, he's a great bloke. We've interviewed him a lot, but he is obviously vision. You can see it.
Yeah, he's an amazing character to have in any sport, I think.
And like Steve, unlike you and Ronnie and Jimmy, you're kind of a bit like Steve. You're different sorts of characters. You're much quieter when you played, when you're more kind of considered. You weren't a particularly flamboyant character when you played the game. You didn't play that aspect up, did you?
Yeah, I mean, I played a very aggressive game. I obviously went for my shots, played very little safety play and stuff. So I think I probably changed the way the game was played in that aspect. But I think the sort of, you know, the natural flair players, I didn't do the shots at the end of the frame. I didn't have the cue power to play the shots Jimmy played for a start. I think when I became a winner and not showing any emotion, I think people don't like that. I think people like to see emotion, whether you lose or whether you win. And that was my job to go and win. And when I held a trophy, I very rarely showed much emotion because to me that was job done. And where's the next one?
Well, let's pick another one of the five favourites. There's a corker on 290. We'll come back to that. But there is.
Like top five favourite childhood foods. Mince and tatties.
Mince and tatties. Scottish staple.
Yeah, haggis supper at number four.
Blimey,
Macaroni cheese at two. Fish and chips 3. And your granny's homemade soups at 5.
Yeah. Haggis supper. Every time I go back to Scotland, I live down here now. That's the first thing you got to get is a haggis supper.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
There's one memorable moment that it kind of brought back, which when you did This Is Your Life and they kind of surprised you and you said, well, I'm only 21. Yeah. I kind of remember it in that time. It was very odd, wasn't you, thinking, I haven't had a life?
Oh, I know. I actually had an autobiography out that year as well. I think my manager thought this was a great idea. Yeah. 21, win the World Championship and cash in. But ridiculous. I couldn't believe it when the guy came out, This Is Your Life.
Was it Michael Aspel?
Yes, Michael Aspel, oh, yeah.
How did you... I mean, it was a kind of meteoric rise. You're a kind of big star, very much in the kind of spotlight. It must have been pretty tough to deal with. Is that why ultimately you did kind of go down the therapy route a little bit later on and start to kind of make sense of it all?
Talking to someone about my career and my form was a sort of separate thing, but I was very fortunate because I had a very good manager and very good family background, which kept my feet in the ground. And I also think living in Scotland as well helped.
Because you can't get up yourself, sort of thing.
Exactly, no chance. In terms of your financial, whenever I won prize money, I didn't get it personally. It went to a company account and I was given a wage. And so I was never allowed to get ideas above my station.
Yeah, really. And that probably made a big difference.
Very much so.
Yeah, yeah.
We're both fascinated though, and this I think applies to darts players and snooker players, that when a darts or a snooker player gets old, it's not like a footballer getting old. A footballer loses his physical ability. What happens to a snooker player, like a great player like you and Steve, when you just can't do it anymore?
I think you're right. I mean, there's no physical reason why you can't play. I mean, you look at the top players now. Ronnie's 43. John Higgins the same. Mark Williams. But I think what goes is your hunger to practice, put the hours in. That was one of the reasons I retired, amongst many. But I just couldn't motivate myself to get in, playing that table 4, 5, 6 hours every day, which is what I'd done through my whole career to get to the top and to be the dominant player. And I think once you stop that took away the edge from me.
You say in the book you still go out and do some exhibitions, but you don't particularly enjoy playing in the way you did before.
Well, I just my game basically the last 10, 12 years of my career was shot, really. The term yips was, I hate the word, but it was. I mean, I couldn't accelerate through the ball. I was decelerating to the point where near the end there was 50% of the shots I couldn't play properly. I say in the book the maximum I made in my last World Championship, 6 shots out of 36 I probably played properly. The other that I didn't hit right at all, but I managed to get them and get by. So when you don't play the game the way you know you can, it's just not enjoyable.
And the book kind of starts with you at a Worlds knowing that this is it, this is the end. And that's fascinating. You go into that last session, you're sitting there. Was it John Higgins you played in that last
match? Stephen McGuire was the last match,
And you sit there and you're like thinking, well, I wonder what I'm going to do in my retirement. You're gone, hadn't you? Mentally, you weren't even in the room.
Incredible. I mean, as I say, I'd made a 147 the first round. I'd beaten John Higgins in the second round, although that was a terrible match. None of us played really that well. And I went 4-0 down to McGuire. I missed an easy pink to make it 3-1. Went to the dressing room and said to the guy who was coaching me at the time, that's it, can't win. I mean, he needed 9 more frames.
Yeah.
But I was just like, I was so demoralised with the way my game is. I just said, that's it. And then the rest of the match, just sat in my chair, as you say, thinking what's
just
happening next.
Out.
What about missing out on number 8 against Ebden? That was pretty close, wasn't it? That was probably a different feeling.
That's the one match that still gives me shivers down my spine. And I mean, I will say this. It's the one match that I completely can't believe I lost. And it's no disrespect to Peter. I'd had a massive semi-final win against O'Sullivan in the semis. Thought that was the final. I thought whoever won that was going to win. And didn't treat Peter with the respect. I thought he couldn't beat me over 4 sessions. Mm-hmm. And of course he did.
I mean, you did an amazing thing. You injured yourself before Worlds, didn't you? I think you broke your... Actually,
fractured
my
elbow.
Your elbow.
Mm.
And at one point, I thought you wouldn't even be able to play any games at all.
I know. Well, I mean, I didn't take part. I didn't ski. I didn't take part in any sports that would possibly injure yourself. The insurance company didn't like that. So, but I fractured my elbow going to the toilet in the middle of the night in my hotel room in Sheffield. I just slipped and used my left arm to break my fall. Oh. And I woke up and it was literally, you know, people can't see this on radio, but literally like right angles. I couldn't straighten my arm.
Wow.
So I had to go. I thought, that's it. I can't play.
Yeah.
And went, had to go to hospital. They gave an injection, got rid of the liquid stuff, and I could straighten it slightly. Was able to play on.
Wow. One of the other top five snooker players to watch. Ding Junhui, Judd Trump, Jimmy White, Alex Higgins, and Ronnie. Mm-hmm. Alex is an interesting one. I mean, what was it like the first time you played him? Because he was such a legend. How old were you?
It's funny. When I first turned pro in 16, Alex was brilliant to me. Every tournament he was there, he would say, come and have a practice session. We played together. And I was thinking, wow, this is Alex Higgins. I'm actually practicing with Alex Higgins. It was amazing. But then sort of 2-3, when I started to get success, all of a sudden I was the enemy. He just turned. Just an incredible character. I mean, I've never seen anyone walk in a room and change the atmosphere in a room like he could. Usually in a bad way, unfortunately. But snooker wouldn't be where it is without Alex Higgins.
No, you're right. He was fundamental, wasn't he? I love the story the last time, sadly, you saw him before he died as well, when he had a little idea for you, didn't he?
Oh, I couldn't believe this. He said, I'm going to start playing against Stephen. And I said, oh, okay, that's good, Alex. And then he said, yeah, I'm going to come up and pitch my caravan in your driveway, and we're going to practice together. I said, great.
And then he said, well, if you don't want the caravan, I'll just move in with you.
it was quite scary, but it never happened.
Wow, yeah, it was that sort of time of his life when he was, he kept talking about coming back, didn't he?
He played often. A few Legends events, unfortunately, obviously through illness as well. He wasn't well at the end, and he couldn't, I mean, he didn't look strong enough to hold the cue, never mind play. And went to his funeral, but an incredible occasion. His funeral, like thousands of people lying in the streets, amazing.
You've played snooker in some odd places as part of kind of promotional tours. There's one just after the Worlds where you play on an oil rig.
Yeah.
A Young Offenders Institute, and then the Sultan of Brunei's house. That's not a bad little relic.
And a bit random, those two. The old platform was, I've never so glad to get back on dry land after that. We had to stay overnight, and that was pretty scary. The Young Offenders was an interesting atmosphere, to say the least.
Yeah, they weren't the friendliest, were they?
No, not at all. No, the thing is, it wasn't too bad towards me, but to each wing that came in, there was like different noises was happening. I was like, oh, they'd like, get me out of here. But the Sultan of Brunei's son was very keen on snooker in the late 80s, early 90s. And a few of us, individually, would go to his house in Hampstead and give him a private lesson.
It was quite a nice house.
It was a lovely house, yeah.
You also share a love of cigars, don't you, with Andy Goldstein? Because he often posts his own. Stephen Hendry's just given me this massive thing from Cuba.
I've been into cigars about 7 or 8 years, and we post each other these little cigar videos, and we've got what we call a cigar club. It's not much of a club. I think we've only met once, but we enjoy it.
Poker's become a love as well. You play a bit, don't you?
I'm on Party Poker. They're developing a new thing which kind of teaches you how to play and shows you your weaknesses, and at the moment I'm at intermediate, which is kind of like just below middle, but I love playing. It's great.
And you did a Celebrity MasterChef. You got into cooking a bit, haven't you?
I still haven't watched it. I've got it on tape. I haven't watched it. I'm devastated I went out in the first round. Cooking's my passion, really, and the dish I went out, I could have cooked it with my eyes shut. But unfortunately, I tried to do it all at once as if someone was going to eat it, but really I should have done piece by piece, because I don't know if I'm giving much away, but they eat it cold.
Right.
So you don't have to do it all at once. You can just cook each element.
What about that?
Oh, that's interesting.
It's like, imagine tales, some of them things cold.
Tales from the show.
I learned something.
I want one more box out. Five strangest Chinese dishes. I take you you've eaten all of these, have you?
Yeah, I've tried them.
Bear claw. Finished them. Did you? Nice?
The way it was cooked tasted nice, but the actual texture of it, no.
Not great. Anteater, what's that taste like?
The sauce and the way it was okay, but no, it's a bit Chinese. I mean, I love it now. When I first went in 87, I hated it. But now I'll try almost anything. And you've got to get over the texture of things.
Pig's anus kebab.
Not great. No, I was with my sort of assistant over there, and he said, we're trying these kebabs, and he says, I have this one. And he says, what is it? It's pork. I went, okay, yeah, okay. But the smell was it. The aroma wasn't.
Oh, dear.
I should have known.
As you can imagine. And sort of life post-snooker for you, is it enjoyable? You say you still play a bit, you still do exhibitions, you still commentate?
Yeah, well, there is a small Legends Tour. It's nothing on the scale of golf, yeah. But there is a Legends Tour that's on. We have six tournaments. The World Championship's actually in the Crucible in August, which will be cool. Obviously do my commentating and stuff, and I still go to China almost every month. So
brilliant. Yeah, fantastic. Well, it is a cracking read, and it's interesting. We were talking earlier on, you kind of wanted it written by someone that wasn't a big snooker fan deliberately. I think it's made it a kind of very accessible read, even if you're not a huge snooker fan. So I think it was probably a good call.
Thank you very much.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
So, Andy, do you have any joyful bits and pieces for us?
Well, it was the reverse dinner at the US Embassy last night.
The reverse dinner?
Yeah, we had the big dinner on Monday night, and we went through the menu. Do you want to know what they ate?
Yeah, go on then,
like to know this. Guests dined on burrata cheese with heritage tomatoes, basil and Maldon salt.
Yesterday we found most of the things they ate sounded like newscasters on American TV on
these
CNN.
These sound like food, but this is quite a strange idea.
There's a reason for that.
A salt is... Well, yes, probably. Yeah. Maldon salt, I've never heard of that.
Maldon salt, he was on CNN.
He was, actually, yeah. Grilled fillet of beef with pom anna.
No,
me neither. Watercress puree. Sounds a bit bland.
Yeah. Call that, watercress puree. Well, you'd be tipping that in the plant
pot. Like, these two do sound like sisters on CNN. Celeriac and Chantenay carrots.
Lovely girl. The carrot sisters.
They're great.
One does the weather, one does the sport.
And summer berries. Yeah, she could be on.
Oh, yeah, she's very good. Yeah,
summer berries. She's summer berries. Financial news. And vanilla ice cream for dessert.
Yeah.
The wines were from California. But Jay Rayner, the food critic, and sometimes scourge of Mike Parry.
Friend of Mike Graham's and Mike Parry's, and they're quite close.
Oh, very close.
Yeah.
He wasn't impressed. He said, basically, it's so bland, you know, but fair enough.
Well, he didn't have to eat it, did he?
He wasn't invited, I don't know.
No, right. Mike. So, just a very quick one, by the way. I've got history news for you. One of the great mysteries of antiquity may have been solved. It's the missing piece from the Lewis Chessman.
Oh, I saw this. Incredible.
And I was thinking, you should see my man Lewis Chessman. He'll save you a hell of a lot of money.
You
sound a bit like an accountant, doesn't it? Yeah.
Do you want a quick T20 birthday spread? One name?
We haven't got time.
Oh, all right.
We haven't got time. We've got clips of the month, and here they
I'll
are.
I'll do it tomorrow.
Hawksby and Jacobs on TalkSport with Greene King.
Hello. That was good. I did
have
time in a sense.
It's great to be back. We weren't expecting to be. Can we bring you the clips of the month? Is that possible?
We can't bring you the music.
We can bring you the clips.
We get the lightning season. They can play it live.
Yeah, if Ian Brody's in town, if he just wants to get a fast car near London Bridge, Ian, and just give us a rendition. But
it's not going to be the same without the music, is it?
Well, it might be a bit dry.
It's going to be very dry.
We'll give it a go anyway. Okay. So here we are. Some particularly...
One of us could sing in the background.
As if we're announcing the death of a monarch, which of course we're not, we'd like to point out. Here are the clips of the month. And we start with Darren Goff. Adding H's where they're not needed and then removing them where they are.
And at six, it's then when we find out how good Liverpool are really hard. And have the ECB been harsh on ales?
There we are.
Harsh on ales.
Where they're not needed and then where they are
needed. And here's a caller to Tony Cascarino on Jim White's show. It was a touch windy.
I think if Chelsea were brave enough to go with a style that could hurt United, because defensively you can get Manu, you watched them last night. It's quite, it's quite easy.
Dirty boy,
so
Tony.
Childish.
He is childish. This is Sam Matterface being incredibly insulting.
That'll win, you do know that.
Sorry,
that'll win that one.
It probably will. Yeah, route one. This is Sam Matterface being incredibly insulting about one of the Cardiff substitutes
On the bench: Brian Murphy, Richards, Cunningham, Harris, Healy, Zahor.
No need for that.
That's a bit much, isn't
it? No need for that. It'd be after your old Healy.
It's Jim White now, who was chatting to football agent Rachel Anderson, who at one point represented a legendary West Ham left back.
So where did it go from there then? You took over Julian's business interest, lock, stock and barrel, and you did deals for Dick's.
It's a fairly unfortunate turn of phrase, really, isn't it?
It's really, yeah.
Now, it's just before 9 o'clock on the weekend sports breakfast, but we appear to be a presenter down. Don't worry, Ian Holloway can cover.
Hello, and here we go. Georgie's off into the toilet, and I have been told to cue to the news.
Too much information, Ollie, really.
We don't really need to know that. And finally, it's Fisherman's Blues, and Nigel had some movie news.
We're hoping to talk about a new film called Pond Life.
Yeah, sounds good.
Sounds very good, yeah.
I think we've got a theme tune for it, haven't we?
We probably have.
Confidence is a preference for the habitual voyeur of what is known as
pond life.
A morning suit can be avoided if you take a route straight through what is known as
pond life.
John Scott Brewer's group, he gets intimidated by the dirty pigeons. They love a bit of him.
Together.
Pond life.
Who's that couple marching? You should cut down on your pond life, mate. Get some exercise.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Just before we go, we give you the winner of the Clips of the Month. 60% of you went for Ian Holloway. It was weekend sports breakfast. Ollie was left in charge. Georgia just popped out. One presenter light. This is what happened.
Hello, and here we go. Georgie's off into the toilet, and I have been told to cue to the news.
Beautifully done, Ollie.
Beautiful.
Beautifully done. Georgie, thank you for that.
So there we are. That was this afternoon's show. And,
yeah, I'm not going to that restaurant where they force feed you.
Yeah, I'd like to watch that, though. I suppose, like being a baby, when you've had enough, you just kind of clam your mouth shut and they start going, choo-choo, here comes the train. They start doing that. Do you wear a little Tommy Tippy?
Yeah, it sounds
and
good.
And or you go, and you spit it all out again. Maybe it's that.
That's a good
Maybe
idea.
It's for old businessmen who like putting a, you know, there is a market for that,
well,
isn't
there?
There
is a market,
like putting
though.
On a Tommy Tippy and getting in a high chair. High Court judges,
oh,
isn't it? Anyway, we'll see you tomorrow.
Marvellous.
We'll see you.
Taking a dark
Maybe
turn
just me
there.
Then. We'll catch up with you tomorrow. Thanks for downloading us.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.